The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. Matt and I are here on Labor Day. They wanted to give us off. We said, no, we want to work on the holiday. We enjoy it so much.
I want to see you, Jimmy. I want to see you on Labor Day.
Now, we're starting right off. Jan Blachowicz is our first guest, and he is here, which is really great. He's fighting Dominic Reyes, of course, light heavyweight belt vacated by Jones in the co-main at UFC 253 on September 26th.
There he is.
How's your reception up there?
Oh, really good. Thank you.
It's good on the Polish mountains. I heard we got a house on the Polish mountains. Is that what I'm hearing?
I was. I do my cardio camp over there, but right now I'm back to Warsaw to my home gym and finish the cardio camp. Now a few more sparring and
You did your camp on the mountains.
Yes.
Now why is that? Is it higher altitude?
Yeah, and you know the air is different. Too hard to breathe. And when you come back from the mountains, you can breathe much better, you know, and your cardio is much better. And I feel it. It's good for me. It's worked for
me. How long do you go for?
1 week.
Oh, just for a week. Okay.
1 week is enough for me.
You don't like running, right? I really enjoyed that you don't like running. What does it hurt your legs running, or you hate it?
I hate running, you know. My knees are hurting. I just don't feel it, you know. It's not working good for me. In the past, I have a coach who say to me, you have to run, you have to do running, we're going to do like this or this, and I just don't feel it, you know?
So for cardio, do you run hills? You don't do sprints? Yes. What do you do for your cardio?
It's not sprints. It's like slow running for the cardio, you know? In the end of my camp, I do sprints, short sprints. Yeah, but this is different. In the mountains, it's 2 hours. Walking to the mountains, to the top, something like this. And we've got a gym on the altitude that we do training over there. So in the morning, we always do cardio training in the mountains, and in the evening, sparring session or drills, MMA drills, something like this in the gym.
When it comes to sparring, how many days a week do you spar typically getting ready for a fight? 2 days, 3 days a week, four?
3 days. 3 days sparring. 3 days. But I've got I do sparring every day, you know?
Yes.
Something like this. But hard sparring, just 3 days.
Okay. And jiu-jitsu and grappling. Do you have designated days for that? You mix up your day, like sparring in the evening, grappling in the morning?
In the morning we do with the whole gym, we do everything together, you know. And in the evening, everybody do what they need to do. I'm going to fight against Dominic Reyes. He's southpaw, really good kickboxer. So my coach, you know, prepare a strategy for me. In the evening, I do with the special guys, you know, secret things, you know.
Yes. How excited, what's the buzz around the academy, around your school, your team, that you're fighting for the belt? I mean, is everybody super psyched?
Everybody's happy, you know, and my sparring partners, they beat me like never, you know. Yeah. I don't know why. They try to help me so much, and they they are much better than before, you know. I think that that also something changed in their minds, and they try to help me much more than before, you know, title shots. Yes. And it's good, you know, that's nice.
What did you think of Reyes's fight with Jones? I thought Dominic won that fight. It was very close, but I thought Reyes won. What did you think?
Was a really close fight, really close, really nice fight, nice to watch. But I think that John Jones was a little bit better.
Oh, you thought Jones did win it?
But only this, you know, maybe one punch more. If Dominic will do one more punch, then he will be better. But for me, yeah, Jones, really close.
Now, were you surprised when he vacated the belt, and how did you find out?
I not was surprised because I think that's gonna happen because John Jones, you know, he said this all these things that he quit, that he will never fight again, he go to heavyweight and stuff like this. So I think that something is wrong with his head, you know, and I think that finally he gonna you know, leave the belt and do something else. And I wasn't surprised.
Oh, okay. So you think that there's something, he's a little restless?
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously you and Reyes is the, do you feel in a way, is there any insult to it that Jones left the division and he said, I'm going to go on to bigger competition?
I don't care. You know, I don't care. I don't think about John Jones anymore right now. Right now I'm thinking only about Dominic. I catch Jones later.
You'll catch him later.
Yeah, I catch him later. But right now I'm focused only about Dominic.
It's about the belt, Jan, right? It's not so much about beating John Jones. It's about getting that gold. That belt.
Belt is the most important, you know. And Dominic is a great fighter. It's, you know, one of the best in the world. And so it's the belt, and Dominic. This is what I think right now. And after this fight, I catch John Jones. If he not gonna fight, if he don't want to fight me in the octagon, I will go to Albuquerque, catch him in his gym. I do this. I will do this fight anyway with him.
He's gonna find him.
So he called you a technical beast. Reyes has a lot of respect for you after you went over Cannoneer. So you know going in that this guy has probably been had his eye on you for a long time.
Yeah, I know. I also got a lot of respect to him. But I know that inside the octagon, you know, we're going to try to knock out each other. You know, it's going to be a tough fight. I also like fighting stand-up. I think that's going to be a kickboxing match in small gloves. So it's going to be really exciting to watch.
Jan, for the fans that are listening that are not too familiar with your background, what discipline, what martial art did you start with, and what age?
When I was 9 years old, I go to the judo class.
Oh, judo.
And I trained this, I don't know, 1 year or maybe 2 years, I don't remember.
Oh, that's a very strong base to start with, is judo.
It was, but I don't remember anything from judo.
Oh, yeah. No?
Come on, it was a long time ago.
Yes. So you moved on to judo. So you went to judo. What came after judo?
You know, the after judo was, you know, era of Jean-Claude Van Damme and Bruce Lee. So we do this.
Started studying their technique.
Yes, also like everybody in my age, I think so.
Yes.
And after that, you know, I go to boxing gym and jiu-jitsu class.
Ah.
And in our jiu-jitsu class was a couple good wrestlers, and they show me also wrestling technique in our jiu-jitsu class. Yeah.
But so did you feel you transitioned easier into the striking or the grappling? How did you take the jiu-jitsu?
I think everything was easy for me when I was younger, you know. Yes. What if I start playing football, I was good. In basketball, I also was good.
Natural athlete.
So, yeah. So that was easy for me. If they show me, you know, wrestler show me some technique to take now, in the next day, I knew everything about this technique. I just grab it, you know, easy.
What about
right now is a little bit tougher, but...
What about your first fight, Jan? How old were you when you had your first MMA fight?
Pro fight?
Yes. Or amateur.
Yeah.
First time in a cage or a ring.
I think. I don't remember. Like in the competition, yeah. I was in boxing. I think that was boxing match first. I don't know, 16 years, 17 years old, 60, something like this.
So you knew early that you wanted to be a fighter. You were going to make this your life? You knew that early?
No, I think that I'm going to go to military. I would like to be a military guy, I've got some special group. They're waiting for me in the military. But when I was 18, I go to my first jiu-jitsu competition, and I won that. And after, when I won, they give me medal, and I was so happy. And I think, okay, I don't want to be military anymore.
Yes.
I'm going to be a sportsman right now.
What did you want to do in the military? Like, anything in particular, or just the idea of the military in general?
I will be the guy who, how to say in English, I will parachute jumping and, you know, with the gun and stuff like this. They waited for me in this company, you know.
Like a ranger or something like that.
Something like this, yeah.
Have you ever skydived?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you probably should learn to do that first.
Yeah.
So you got your, that's funny, Jimmy. So you got your hand raised. You felt at 13 years old winning that grappling competition. You felt the feeling of victory. And you said, get the military. I like that feeling. I'm going to be a sportsman. I'm going to be a fighter.
That's it. Exactly. It was easy.
It was easy.
I changed my, I like this, you know, change my mind in 1 minute, you know, after this competition, jiu-jitsu.
That's amazing. And now look at you. Look at you so many years later. Your family, were they supportive when you were young? Your parents?
My parents, they support me all the time. Even now, if a fight is somewhere close in Europe, always they are with me over there. They support me, you know, they helped me when I was younger and I don't have money. So they give me a little bit, you know, okay, go for training. All the time now I can, count on they support even now, you know, so it's amazing. You know, I got really great parents, all family. I've got great, they support me a lot.
Has it been a little scary for you sparring at all during this whole lockdown? Do you get more concerned about who you're sparring with or who's coming in the gym?
Right now?
Just in general, with this whole lockdown.
A little bit, but you know, we've got, you know, good gym with the good friends. We are all the time together, close together, and we know that nothing bad's gonna happen. So, but you know, never know, because we will see. But I believe that everybody is okay, and fight will go on.
But the mountains is a great place. Like when you think about like all the stuff that's happened, aren't you happy that you go to the mountains where it's kind of quiet and there's not a whole lot of people?
I love mountains, you know. My head is also, it's very good for my head, you know, when I'm on the mountains. I clear my mind over there and I come back to Warsaw, to big city with new energy, you know. Like I say this to my coach, I come back from mountains in Friday and my coach says, okay, in the weekend, don't do anything, you know, because you are tired. But I come to the gym in Saturday and I say, coach, I feel so great, you know, let's do some training. And we do really good and hard training session because, you know, I was tired, but happy than I was in the mountains, and I grabbed the new energy for the training.
Oh, that's great.
There's no distractions when you're in the mountains, correct? It's not like you could go out and get distracted. It's just the focus.
Yeah, focus, you know, you're thinking only about the training, you know, nobody calls to you because you are in a different place, far away from home. So just you, your sparring partners, mountains, good food, and that's it, you know.
Yeah, and you stay for 1 week. How come you don't stay any longer, or is that just what it calls for?
You know, I was a couple of times longer and was too much for me, you know, because it's really hard to train in the mountains, you know. And right now I'm in this part of my life that I know my body really, really well, and I know where to stop, when to push a little bit, when to, you know, slow down. And I just know that the 1 week is enough for me.
If you don't want to push yourself before a championship fight, like in a bad way.
You know, overtraining is worse than you don't. The overtraining is it's not bad for, it's really bad for fighter, you know.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, people, they burn themselves out in the gym and they don't save some for the cage.
People forget the recovery is the same important like training, you know. You need to find the balance between the training, hard training, and the recovery, rest, and stuff like this.
How will overtraining affect somebody in a fight? Getting tired earlier or?
Just after, you know, after 2 minutes of the fight, you are exhausted and you just won't go to home, you know. And that's it. You know, you can do five rounds in the gym when you go to the fight. You do two rounds and you are tired. Why? You need to find the answer, you know. And sometimes it's overtraining. Sometimes it's something in your head, in your mind. But sometimes it's overtraining.
Well, look, man, you are obviously you're deserving of this shot. So we're happy for you. And you and Reyes is a great, great matchup.
Yes.
And I guess you're feeling confident going in. All right. Now, is this your first time ever fighting for a belt?
In the UFC, yes. But I was a KSW champion in the biggest Polish organization, maybe even in Europe, the biggest one. So I know how it feels to get the belt, you know?
Yeah. And you know the pressures that lead up to it in the day, like, you know, it's a little different than a regular fight.
Yeah, it's the pressure is a little bit bigger, but I don't think about the pressure. No, I don't think about this because. But I knew how to change the pressure for fuel for my body. You know, I know how to do this.
This fight's in Abu Dhabi, correct?
Yeah.
Yes, I mean Fight Island. Yeah, of course. Excellent, yeah. Excellent. Oh, that's so great! I'm gonna be there. Be there for this. Yes. No. Oh, I can't wait. I'll get like.
Me too.
You too. Yes, you did.
Yeah. Me. It's good for me, just two hours different between, you know, Poland and there. So,
You got that going for you. A lot of other guys, it's a lot, you know. How's the flight over there?
I think it's gonna be 6 hours because first we have to go to London, stay in London one day for quarantine,
yes.
And
yes.
Then from London we go to Abu Dhabi. So, first of all, I have to go to London. It's far from Poland, it's 4 hours, something like this, but from London, in 6 hours flight. So it's also easy, not so bad.
Well, I'll tell you, your knockout of Luke Rockhold was brutal, and the win over Chakare. I'm looking at your last three fights, and the that Corey Anderson knockout. And Corey, you knocked out Corey Anderson, and he was looking phenomenal right before that, taking out Johnny Walker. So I was expecting a battle between you and him because he never looked better the fight before, and then you just. You knocked him right out of the UFC with that punch. Again, you just, it was like, that was brutal, Jimmy. Imagine that. Imagine that punch with no audience and the sound. That would have been scary. It's scarier.
It was really good. Nice feeling, you know, to beat Corey in this way after what he does for me in our first fight, you know.
Yes.
It was amazing feeling.
Oh, that's right. Redemption.
Yeah. You got that one back.
That's great, man. Well, listen, you definitely earned.
You see, overtraining my first fight against Corey, you know, that was overtrained.
It was.
Isn't it amazing the experience, how experience helps, like you as a fighter?
Yeah, a lot, you know. Yes. You know, I survive almost everything in the cage, you know, or yes. In the octagon. So, yeah, I know how to use my knowledge about everything, you know, what can happen.
Yes, the wins, the losses, it adds to your fight IQ. And it made you the fighter you are today. It's very
exciting. I think I think that I am a really smart fighter, you know, and it's helped me a lot.
Well, listen, good luck, you know, September 26th against Dominic Reyes for the light heavyweight belt. It's great. Yeah. You definitely deserve it. And this is a fight that everybody is looking forward to. You guys are the co-main for Adesanya Costa. So this is what a great night of fights that's going to be. And, you know, stay safe and healthy, and we'll see you on the other side of it.
Thank you. Thank you. Also, be healthy.
All right, Jan, take care.
Thanks, buddy. You know, it's so funny, man, because you see these guys in the cage, Jimmy, and you know this all too well. And even when he's sitting there filming with the phone and they look intimidating and like they're animals. Man, what a nice sweetheart. Big Polish sweetheart.
The UFC guys are almost all, or I should say MMA in general, is one of the things I started liking about the sport was that guys would come on the radio show and I would interview them. And I always liked them. They were always nice guys. You guys were always way more humble than other athletes. And I always just enjoyed talking to fighters. I always thought really not nearly as arrogant as they could be. Just quiet, humble guys.
Are you segueing into how we met Jimmy and became friends?
Well, it was on the radio the first time I met you.
Yes, it was.
Yeah,
it was. Opie and Anthony. I was on there twice. So I remember each time afterwards, I don't know if you wanted to take a picture or something in the hallway, but you were always nice. And then one time, I saw a little bird flying around a UFC. It was Jimmy. It was at a buffet. You were with that nice, you had a nice girlfriend at the time.
Jen was my ex at the time, I think. We were in Vegas, and she's my closest friends. And I saw you, and I'm like, I'm so bad at being socially comfortable. Like, I'm really socially, I suck. But I'm like, no, I like Matt. I'm going to go say hi to him. Like, I never say hi to people because I'm always like, I don't
want to talk
to me. I was
so happy you did. I was so happy you did. And then when I was leaving, I forgot who I was with. But I seen you, and then you were like facing us. You gave like a smile. And I go, I like that little Jimmy. I do. And I didn't even know you that well, Jimmy.
Nope.
You know?
And then not long after, Dana called me, and I had no idea that they were doing a podcast. And that was how it
look at that, Jimmy.
Yeah,
look,
it's crazy, right?
How many years? Hey, Antonio, find out how long we've been doing this podcast for. I got the memory of a goldfish, and Jimmy thinks it's only been a couple of years. It's been long.
Oh, believe me, it feels long. All right. All right, let's get John Gooden.
John Gooden.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
What's going on? How are we doing?
We're good, buddy. How are you? Where are you right now?
I'm near my country retreat. No, I wish I had a country retreat. So I'm in Norfolk, which is a different way to you guys pronounce it, on the very east coast of England. It's like a seaside place. So yeah, we're here with some friends and I'm in a car park trying to find some 4G to speak to you guys.
Yeah, because I saw where the steering wheel was. That is the steering wheel, right? I'm like, there's no way you're in Virginia with the steering wheel right there.
No, I'm right there. I'm right there behind the steering wheel.
Where do you reside, John? Where do you live? You live in England?
Yeah. I'm like 30 minutes north of London.
Okay. Now, as a guy that only visited and you know, seen European Vacation with Chevy Chase, let me ask you a question. Is it as gloomy as they make it out to be? Where's the day? I see some sunshine there. Come on.
This is right now. It's so grim. We went out on a boat this morning and it was raining. We made the best of it. No, in Europe, near the Mediterranean, the weather is beautiful, like too hot. My neighbors went down where'd they go? Cyprus. And it was like 40 something degrees, which is over 100. So not everywhere, but the UK's very changeable, shall we say. And we get a lot of rain, a lot of grey clouds, a lot of wind. But it makes us tougher for it, you know?
It sure does. But let me ask you now. You know, in here in the States, I don't know, what do they say, Seattle, Jimmy? There's a place that's very gloomy, and they're like...
Pacific Northwest, yeah.
Whatever Seattle, it was, and Portland. They're like, oh, the suicides there are crazy because the sun never comes out and everybody's depressed. I don't hear everybody in London over there killing themselves. Tell me, is that going on over there, though?
You know what? I mean, obviously, not a joking matter. And I don't really hear it so much in London. I think it's quite London's quite an affluent area, despite all the pressures of fast-paced living. But in Scandinavia, that is a real thing. And funny enough, a guy that was fighting over in Fight Island, Matt Kwan Amerkani, I was talking to him about it because there's a lot of people have fled war zones like Iran, Iraq, and they've found themselves in Scandinavia, places like Finland, and just stuff like, we all know vitamin D is a genuine thing. If you lack vitamin D, then your moods go down. And he was telling me stories of friends that had taken their own lives and things like that, heartbreaking stuff. And it's true to the statistics of Scandinavia having quite a lot of those suicide rates, because you know, in the winter the sun just, you know, peeps out for a couple of hours and goes away again. It's pretty tough.
There's a name for it. It's like seasonal affected disorder. Like people really get that from, I know at least in Seattle I've heard that term, where it was like people just get like maybe it is lack of vitamin D.
Yeah, and I get, if you're not, I'm guessing this, by the way, but I would imagine if you're not from there originally, then genetically, I don't know, maybe your vitamin D levels need more, and therefore it's you need to be supplementing that if you're from like a really hot climate and emigrated to somewhere like Finland, where it's really far north and it's beautiful. But yeah, in the winter, you barely see any sunlight. A bit like where Gunnar Nelson's from. That place gets like 1 or 2 hours of sunlight in the winter.
Oh, shit. Wow. Really? Where Gunnar Nelson's from?
Yeah, man. But I tell you, what a stunning place.
Is that Iceland, right?
Oh, yeah. It is like nowhere else in the world. I mean, I'm not saying I've traveled extensively, but I've been there a few times now, and it's incredible. And the gym that they've built, because there's nothing to do apart from be inside, because no one wants to go out because it's so cold, everyone trains. And everyone in Reykjavik trains at Mjolnir Gym. So don't mess with anyone on the streets of Reykjavik, because they like a minimum blue belt under Gunnar Nelson by now.
I went there once. Did you ever go to the hot springs there? There's that natural hot spring, and the floor is all gooey. It feels like you're stepping in like spinach. Yeah.
Like the silicon, it's the silicon stuff.
Yeah.
So I took my dad there, right? So that's normally reserved as like a romantic spot that go to. And it was my dad's 60th birthday, and he doesn't do a lot of traveling. My mum would only really go to a beach, but my dad, he kind of likes the weather a little bit more different. So I took him there, and yeah, it was a bit weird going there with your dad, but you know, he was rubbing the silicon on his bald head, and
yeah,
it was pretty cool. Never seen anything like it in my life. So it was an experience.
The hot springs, you're saying?
The hot springs.
How hot is it? Is it like, how hot is it?
Hot enough to be very comfortable in the water when it's like negative, ridiculous outside.
Oh, it's like a freaking hot tub out there. Like you go out there when it's cold. Oh.
Yeah, but naturally, because of all of the volcanic stuff that goes on around there, it keeps it real warm.
Now, totally changing the subject. You were working with Dan Hardy when he had that little altercation with Herb Dean, or no?
Yes, yeah.
Awkward? How was that when you were there live? I love Dan. I get along with Dan Hardy very well. I know him way back. So I respected that he stood up for it, but because of the audience, it was a weird dynamic going on there. For people that don't know, I should maybe set up the scene here. Herb Dean did not stop a fight, I guess, quick enough to the liking of Dan Hardy, who was being an analyst that night.
And I thought Dan was right as far as the fight up. He stopped quicker. I felt like he should have been stopped quicker, too.
But because there's no crowd, it was very... I'm not going to say unprofessional, but it felt weird.
I guess there's a few layers to this, right? So first of all, it was the second time around where we all thought that Herb hadn't really pulled the trigger in stopping a fight. There was another fight earlier on, I think the heavyweight fight, if my memory serves me correctly. And the guy was he was getting a shelling. And we're like, oh, that probably could have been stopped a little earlier. But it probably wasn't as dramatic as the next one with Trinaldo and Jai Herbert. And then, you know, Trinaldo floors Jai. Jai looks like he's kind of out, flash knockout maybe. Trinaldo standing over him, looks over at Herb, and Herb just kind of is like, you know, carry on. So Trinaldo did, and both Felder and Dan were calling for the fight to be stopped. And I guess because it was without a crowd, Herb could hear that. But then, you know, listen, it's not the first time an analyst has ever shouted that, but I guess because the crowd isn't in play and there's not an underlying level of noise, then the referee heard that quite clearly. So then Herb started engaging with Dan whilst he was in the octagon, like going over to him and like asking him what's up type thing. And Dan and him were kind of just saying something. And then they both kind of said, let's talk about it after. We all thought he meant after the event. But then Dan, my memory doesn't serve me very well these days. I think I've been punched in the face a lot too much. Well, these fighters, they got a much better excuse than I have. I think what basically happened then was Dan, maybe it was a fight after that one. Dan was stood up to turn around to do a post-fight interview. And Herb came over to us, sort of into our broadcast position. Now, Matt will know that there's a little bit of space between the apron of the octagon and where the commentators are because of this whole distancing thing. So Herb was the guy that approached Dan. Dan's about to do an interview. And then, you know, so it was very unfortunate. You know, I think Herb maybe thought that because Dan was stood up, he was maybe going to, you know, go to the restroom or something like that. I don't know. But maybe Herb shouldn't have come over to Dan. Maybe Dan shouldn't have used that opportunity to speak to Herb. But at the same time, you know, the referees are in an entirely different hotel. And Dan is so, so passionate. Like his heart and mind is completely in the right place with this. He wants the best for the sport. And sometimes it doesn't matter whether he's on a broadcast, whether he's at home in his front room, you know, he will say what he thinks is right in defense of fighter safety and everything else. And
I didn't realize that he came over to you guys. Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because the way the story is reported, and you can never believe it, is that, you know, Herb is doing something and Dan Hardy jumps up like a maniac. And that didn't make sense. This makes perfect sense.
No, I mean, Dan and Paul reacted. Herb heard that. But then after the fact, Herb came over to the broadcast position and started engaging with Dan at that point. Dan would have been, there are no breaks, you know, there's no breaks in our, it's a marathon commentary gig, you know, we don't have time to, we move on very quickly, and we were going to maybe talk about it in the post show. And then Herb came over, and then we all know what kind of transpired.
It's funny, because in the past, like you would hear Joe Rogan say stuff that could be, if the ref heard it, might be like, you know, hey man, mind your business. You know, it's a different time now. It's very, people got to get used to this whole no audience thing. It's right. A little, I mean, listen, it's so funny, because it goes for the fighters too, and they can do what they like. But who was it the last time that said, yeah, listen to Bisping when he said something about the low blows or something? Funny. Yeah. Like, that was Dustin Poirier. Yeah. Was it?
I don't remember, but I remember the moment. I don't remember who said it.
But it's funny. It's a different type thing that I think everybody's kind of got to get used to, you know? It's just unfortunate, because I'm glad it's better now. Yeah, it was Poirier, the saying here. But I like all parties involved. I like Dan, and Herb is one of the referees I like better, even though he stood me up at Lytle back in the day. But
there was a lot of backlash from it, if I'm honest. And I grew up, and so did Dan to a certain extent, because we're a smaller space. Like, we've grown up in the sport with a lot of these officials. Like, before the UFC, I was doing a lot of Cage Warriors stuff with judges and referees, and we've all grown up in the sport. We've all seen one passion. We all know that we're pulling in the same direction. So I'm very, very careful before I pass judgment at a referee or a judge. I've done it in the past. I've got it wrong. I've apologized personally, and it's an entirely different situation to this one. I need to, you know, draw a line in the sand there. So Dan isn't the kind of guy who is just out there to try and cause trouble. Something must have triggered him that he saw in his mind. And, you know, and then he went back and explained himself further. So, yeah, it was just...
As long as he's still got a job and everything's good.
Yeah, we like Dan.
The guy is, when it comes to breaking down fights and analysis, he goes further than anyone else I know. And we have the best of the best in our sport, you know, in the octagon and also behind the microphone. But Dan lives and breathes this to the point where he'll embody a fighter through the gloves and just use the bag and try and be that fighter to understand them a bit more before our Inside the Octagon shows. Like, nothing but respect for the way that Dan approaches his analysis work.
And I'm interested in the fact the referees stay at a different hotel. It never occurred to me that they would put the refs up at a different hotel, but I guess they have to.
Well, no, that's not always. It's just on Fight Island, I think they want to reserve one of the hotels where all of the interviews and media and all that kind of stuff gets done, so it's easier for the fighters. And maybe that doesn't leave enough space for the referees. But also, and as I said, I've grown up with judges and referees, etc. Sometimes they like to be a little bit separate, so that no one can ever point the finger and say, I saw you having a beer at the bar with such and such.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And if someone didn't like a stoppage, then, you know, with all fairness to these referees, they kind of help themselves by keeping themselves away from other people, like the athletes and the teams.
Yeah. John, you said you did Cage Wars, used to be you used to work for them as far as with the broadcasting thing. What did you do, any other sports or no?
As in broadcast wise?
Yes, as broadcast. Yeah.
I fell into this. Like, I harbored ambitions of being like a TV presenter when I was in my early 20s. I tried it at the BBC in something entirely different, but just shelved it. But then martial arts is like, I was on the mat since I was about seven. Oh. Did amateur boxing, did like the amateur boxing thing is when I was at university around sort of 19. And then MMA, I found MMA like way later on in my late 20s and early 30s. And I was just working in the scene and found my way to Cage Warriors. And that's when I started to work behind a microphone. So my first job as a commentator was for my coach's own show back in Watford, the Coliseum, where I would run around the locker room as guys, amateurs were getting their hands wrapped and going, look, dude, you've got to walk out. There's obviously no Sherdog record at the time. I'm not even sure there was a great deal on like YouTube or Facebook. Like, what do you do? Why are you doing this? Etc. So I've really kind of had to learn the sport, the commentary gig through MMA. I haven't hijacked this from something else. So I am completely organically developed through mixed martial arts.
I'm amazed with guys who can call, because I think John Anik, who is such a great analyst, you know, it comes from baseball and football. Like, I'm fascinated by anybody who can watch a sport and intelligently break it down, especially something like fighting, which has so much anticipation of when guys are on the ground, what they're trying to avoid, what they're trying to accomplish. You know, with baseball, it's like we all know what he's doing. You threw the ball and he's trying to fucking hit it. That's baseball. But in fighting, it's, you have to describe what's going on the floor, what a guy's motivation is for doing certain things, about underhooks and head movement. It's a really difficult one to call, I think.
I mean, I'll agree, of course, you know. It's the most, but I only say that. I don't really know any difference, if I'm honest, guys. Like, Anik tells me that it is, and I understand with soccer, it's 45 minutes each half, so you'll know that you got to top and tail it, maybe fill some air in the middle. But that's about it. And the only thing that sort of frustrates me a little bit, and this is an ego thing. In the UK, I don't think big sports networks really understand mixed martial arts or the UFC product as well as they do stateside. So they don't really respect our roles as commentators as much as they would do in North America, which means those opportunities for me to try my hand at something else haven't presented themselves many, many times. But to be honest, like, I don't want to go anywhere. I want to do this until I can't talk anymore. So it's just, yeah, as I say, it's just an ego thing. And I feel like we do have a hard job, as we were alluding to earlier. Those nights in Fight Island were 9-hour stretches when you include the post-pro. And you're running to the bathroom to, you know, when a nature call. So it's a tough gig, but at the same time, I don't know any different. I've grown up doing this. I was calling up to 20 fight cards, amateur pro stuff, and I just love every minute of it.
Let me ask you, what would you like this as a platform to jump into? What would you like to go into next? Like, you're saying it could, like, because it's not as, I'm not going to say well respected. What you said is not as popular, I guess, in the UK as it is over in the States. What doors would you like it to open? Like voice work or like you said, presenter work, or what would you?
Honestly, Matt, I'm happy. Genuinely, what I would like to do is I'd like to see mixed martial arts be spoken of alongside other mainstream sports in the UK. And it would be wonderful if I can help it through presentation, through producing features, through own personal projects. Like Dan Hardy and I are very aligned on our goals in that. We're trying to give the microphone and just tell the story, because our athletes don't get the respect that they deserve internationally. And I would just want to be a piece of that and help that come about. In terms of other stuff, look, I actually like the producing work that I do for the UFC, and I'd like to do some of my own personal projects. I've done a couple of sort of days where I followed like Darren Till. I did one with Jack Shaw not too long ago, Arnold Allen. I'd like to do more of those on a personal level, but really there's so much unmined stories and stuff and stories and features within mixed martial arts that right now I can't see there's any room or time to do anything else. So I'm happy. I'd love to become well recognized by other great British broadcasters, but because it's within mixed martial arts, and that means mixed martial arts needs to be up there first.
And John, you know, it's funny. You said the athletes don't get the respect. Matt and I are both big fans of Leon Edwards. And we don't think that Leon, maybe because, again, he's such a nice guy and a soft-spoken guy, we don't think he gets the respect he deserves as far as, I mean, you know, fighters know how good he is. But, I mean, I would love to see more happening for him. I think he's a very, very underrated guy. I mean, I know he's number three, but I think that he should be featured a lot more and much more publicly known than he is.
Yeah, and I really don't know what more he needs to do. I mean, he's been a little inactive now, and I genuinely don't know the reasons for that, but I would imagine that they are like genuine reasons. I guess this coronavirus thing has affected every nation sure. differently, sometimes geographically. Like, we're not, jiu-jitsu's classes aren't open in the UK still. You can't just rock up and, you know, just work out. It's only reserved for elite athletes and the people that they need in order to get the elite person ready. So I know that that would have been tricky for Leon with the first Fight Island setup. The thing I respect about Leon is he wants to be who he is. He doesn't want to be contrived. He's got an incredible story. The BT Sport, who are the UFC partner in the UK, they actually told it. It was a bit like the Fight Law series, where they did some animations and they spoke about Leon's roots in Jamaica, and it was very tricky. Like, his dad was involved in some pretty sketchy stuff, and then they came over to London, and that kind of followed with, and then his mum moved up to Birmingham, and I mean, I've probably even told the story a little wrongly, incorrectly. But one thing I would say is it took Leon's management a lot of persuasion to even allow Leon to tell that story, because he's a private man. And he kind of says that that's my story, my struggle. He doesn't want to be like typecast in that way. And also the kind of, he was on the streets and he's a tough guy. Like, I've been down the gym, and a lot of the guys around him say that he's the real deal, not only in the cage, but before he turned his life around and became a professional elite athlete. Like, Leon's life could have gone the whole other way. So he gets the respect off of everyone, if you like. But he won't talk about that because he believes that a man's business should remain a man's business and not be shared. And again, it might be a cultural thing, but that's just the way he is. If you follow his brother fights for Bellator, he'll get up on the stage at a weigh-in and he's right up in people's grills. He's, you know, pointing a finger. He's quite loudly spoken. But Leon will be in the background. But if it goes down, like, people, you won't, not many people will step to Leon. And it's just, it's quite fascinating. Of course, I think that way because I'm a storyteller, but I wouldn't have told you that unless Leon had given the green light for BT Sport to have told that story, because it was obviously private to him, and I think people are twisting his arm to make him speak a little bit more so that more opportunities come his way. But really, Leon is a true martial artist, professional, who just wants to do his job, get better, and be a very positive role model for the people of Birmingham, like young folk in Birmingham, you know, young black men in Birmingham as well, and also for Jamaica. And I think he has a very important role. And I respect him wholeheartedly for staying true to what he feels is his truth.
Yeah. And the good thing is, but when people hear that stuff, or they hear where you came from, or they hear the word, there's a lot of people who relate to that. And I think it helps in a way that he might not even know it helps. It probably is inspirational to people that might think, this is where I'm going and there's nothing that can be done about it. And he's not some detached observer. He's a guy that lived it and almost went down that road. So maybe that would be really helpful to other people. And maybe he never thought of it that way, but he's probably helping more people than he realizes.
Well, and I think that's what, and I know that's what his management communicated to him. And I actually did a feature with him. I don't think it aired because the London show got canceled. So it was pre Edwards Woodley. And I went out to his high school with him because I do some producer work for the UFC. And they invited in like a full hall, like 100 kids or more, to listen to Leon's story, tell his story. Then we had a little Q&A, and he means a great deal. His his face is on the wall there as someone that these kids can look up to. There have been other musicians and athletes that have come from this school as well. So Leon can stand side by side with other people in the public eye. And I think we should all be very proud of that as, you know, stakeholders in the mixed martial arts community.
Well, I mean, listen, I'm no producer, but if I had to hype up a fight and I have the, you have this background for Leon, we all know Masvidal's background,
right,
fighting in the streets with Kimbo in the streets of Miami. This could be a very, very exciting like matchup as far as just the stories, their backgrounds, because people don't know this about Leon. If he's open about it and they're talking about it in the UK, I mean, this is the first time I'm hearing any of this, Jimmy. And we love Leon.
Yeah, we
like,
do.
We like him as a fighter. I think he should share that story. The UFC should hype that up. And I want to see him versus Masvidal. The guy, they had that street beef where he gave him the three-piece and the soda. And that pretty much took Masvidal to the next level as far as, man, this guy is real and look what he did. And but you never let Leon get his, you know, get some payback. Put this, I mean, who the hell would want to see them fight?
That's the fight I want to see.
And the scary thing is that I was there at that event. I called those fights and I had just gone backstage after we'd wrapped. And I saw Masvidal, literally, this had happened 5 seconds before. Masvidal had been ushered back to where I was walking up. And I spoke to Masvidal. Masvidal looked like he was waiting for a bus as I was talking to him about what had just happened. Like the guy had just had another fight, you know, unsanctioned, street fight, if you like, in inverted commas. And he was just like, me and Leon just got into it. And it, like his heart rate hadn't raised one little bit, which blew my mind. And then Leon, when I speak to Leon about it now, he's like, yeah, well, you know, on the street, in a car park or in a cage, we'll get it done. And again, he's like flatlining. These two are cold killers.
Yeah.
And we need to make it happen. They both want it. I know that they do. I know that Masvidal's stock has risen, but they can sell that fight. And it would. I'd like to see it for Leon. I think it would help people understand him a little bit more. And of course, it's all at the end of the day, this is about putting the best against the best. And they're two of the best.
And before we let you go, too, we just talked to Jan Blachowicz. What do you think of this matchup with Reyes? And you know, people talk about John jumping Francis to fight Stipe. I would think that they should give John another fight in the heavyweight division. I mean, I don't make those decisions, but I would think that he should have to fight one person before he gets to Stipe and leapfrogs in Francis.
Yeah, well, I was out with Jan in Poland doing the countdown shoot, and yeah, it was great to see get this opportunity again. He's just a hard-working martial artist, you know, he's got a great personality, but you're never going to get him trash talking really. But you got to understand Polish mixed martial arts. They have about 5 million people watch MMA on TV for their local promotion over there. It is huge. And when you are a big star over there, it's a big deal. And they like big men. They like the heavyweights. They have, you know, I don't always agree with some of the big headliners that they have, but it attracts a lot of attention. And now they potentially have a really big male star. I think that it could elevate the sport even higher back in Poland after Joanna Jędrzejczyk obviously did such an incredible job becoming a champion, flying the flag for Poland. But I think that we can build off of that if Jan or Poland, Polish mixed martial arts will build off of that if Jan is victorious. And the world has stood still over there. The sporting world has stood still since Jan has been called up for this fight. So it is really, really big news over there.
And I agree with you. And John leaving the division, I mean, again, we'll never know his total. Maybe he just wants a bigger, and I don't say this in a bigger payday. I don't even say that in a bad way. It's just, it's a job. And he may see some names like Stipe at the top. Have you heard anything about him? Because now I'm hearing, well, maybe he will be getting the title shot. Dana had indicated that he does kind of deserve it.
Well, I thought I heard Dana say that no one's going to leapfrog Ngannou. So I don't know how long Jones is going to take before he actually steps in as a heavyweight. And I think as someone who has got such a long career, and this is of no disrespect to anyone else at 205, I think it's been a marquee division for the UFC for the long time. And everyone who's in a top 10 are elite. But you got to think he's been sat there for a very, very long time. And when you consider his most recent performances to some of those prior to some of his indiscretions, maybe he's looking to change things up to see what new levels he can bring out of himself. Going up to heavyweight is automatically a huge headline for us fans. Sure. We want to see how the greatest, potentially the greatest of all time does. So, I mean, I'm excited whenever I see John Jones on a card. Whoever they get him to fight would be awesome. There's Brock Lesnar has been, talked about. Big names everywhere, but just John Jones going up to heavyweight is, what's it going to look like? You know, I'm very excited to see how it plays out.
It's also scary to me because Jones, as we all know how amazing he is, to have your first fight. I mean, potentially, if he doesn't, if it's a championship fight and Stipe and Ngannou fight, and let's just say Ngannou wins the second meeting, I mean, Jones's first fight at heavyweight against Ngannou, like what a terrifying first fight at that weight to have to deal with.
But I don't think John Jones would agree. I think
he definitely wouldn't.
And a lot of us think that he is the greatest. He's currently the pound for pound in the rankings. He is in the conversation for sure of one of the greatest to ever do it.
Yeah.
And I feel like he probably thinks that he'll be able to beat any single individual that walks this planet.
Well, I mean, technically, he never lost ever. I mean, that whole Matt Hamill. Matt Hamill. I got confused with him and Mark Hamill.
Matt Hamill. Yeah.
With the dumb Star Wars guy. But with the fucking downward elbows and everything. It's all bullshit. So he's undefeated. I say whoever has the belt, whether it's Francis, Stipe, whatever, John Jones should get an immediate title shot because the dude did enough. What the hell?
Well,
what the hell? Are you doing? What is he going to prove himself that he's a good fighter at heavyweight? Guy's one of the best ever.
I 100% agree. We see other contenders move around divisions and they get an immediate title shot.
Jose Aldo.
You know, Conor McGregor was there as well. You cannot deny that he hasn't earned it in the octagon. So. Sign me up.
Hey, John, am I the only guy that think it's weird that fucking Anderson Silva wants to fight Conor McGregor? What the fuck is that?
It's money. I mean, it's just smart. It's two giant names.
No, but dude, but it's a giant versus a fucking little guy. What the fuck is that? I don't care how old he is. I like Anderson Silva. I do. I'm not attacking a guy. But the guys he likes to call out now, and I know he's older, maybe he deserves a lighter fight. I don't know. But I mean, he's like, I remember he wanted to fight Nick Diaz again for a while. And then he wants to fight Conor McGregor. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? I mean, listen. Hey, GOAT, what the fuck are you doing? I don't know.
He saw what GSP did.
Sometimes I just think out loud, Johnny.
Did I not? He was prompted, though. Like, I might be wrong here, but I feel like someone asked him if he would fight Conor rather than him sitting there and just on someone's show and go, I want Conor McGregor. Because I think, I don't know. It was an English interview as well, I've got that wrong. And he's probably not going to turn down. Again, is he going to turn down anyone? No.
No, listen. I'm not saying the guy's looking for easy fights.
Yeah.
I'm saying he's calling out the little guys. Whatever. He put his foot in Vito Belfort's face. Whatever. He can do what he likes. Fuck. Johnny. Hey, man. What else, Jimmy? Anything else before we...
No, this was great. We appreciate you coming on, and you're so good at what you do, and I always love when you're calling the fight. And what's your next one? What's the next fight you're calling?
I'm going out to Fight Island, I guess. Woo! I'm waiting for the call up on that one. Good to go. You know, I'm well rested now, so it's time to get these vocals out there again.
Do you get it like the rest of us do with other parts of our careers? Do you ever get like, if you hear somebody else doing a fight, do you ever hear like, well, I could have done that one. Like what, like that's two in a row for him. Am I like, do you ever get that feeling too? Like you're afraid they're going to squeeze you out?
No. Oh, God, don't say things like that. God, I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. No, we've got an incredible team. I have a great relationship with Anik. I see Brendan on the road quite a lot as well. We tend to kind of, one does the desk, one does commentary. There's enough to go around. Yep. So I'm happy with my lot. I'm happy that the UFC will allow me to put how I feel mixed martial arts should be kind of expressed from a play-by-play point of view on the airwaves. And I'm grateful for that spot. And I will continue to keep improving and show up.
Your excitement for the sport, like how much you really love it, is very obvious when you're commentating. You know, it's obvious that you really love what you're watching. And that's why I think I enjoy you so much.
Yeah, you can't think that.
All the way out, like I've got teammates that have got big fights coming up, and I just want to get in there. I still enjoy the sparring. It's very important to me to keep training, develop the language. Just the full pack, all of it, you know, 360. I've been in this a long time now, and I need to continue that despite my aging body, because it's a beautiful sport, man, and there's a long way to go. And we got a lot of good people coming up behind the microphone that want my job. So I gotta keep on progressing.
Fuck yeah.
All right, well, John,
Jimmy's even training now. Jimmy Rivera took him on as a student.
I mean, everybody else is having such a good time with it. I might as well go in there and learn how to defend myself on the subway.
There you go.
Good talking to you, John. And, hopefully you stay healthy and we'll see you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, man. Be good.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
What are you doing, Jimmy?
Watching you. Chase Hooper retweeted something.
What was it, Jimmy?
I believe you were upset that somebody was criticizing.
It was Mark Lane.
Gracie?
Yeah. Jimmy, I have a hard time biting my tongue.
Yeah. Ah. So did you guys ever, what did he say about?
What did Chase say about it?
He just retweeted it. He goes, he said, there's definitely a lot of expert swimmers who've never jumped in the pool out there. He was backing you up. He liked it.
Oh, thank you, Chase. Yeah, Chase
is a good egg.
The story behind that is that that guy, Mark Lehman, was one of the coaches, like an assistant coach or whatever. Yeah. Like, because we had a group of, Our season of Tough of the Ultimate Fighter season 4 was called The Comeback. So we were all vets. We were all guys that didn't, myself, Team Thomas, Chris Lytle. So they didn't give us like two set coaches. They gave us like a few like guys that were there to just help assist us. And he was one of them, a jiu-jitsu guy. And he just wasn't my type of guy, Jimmy,
right,
at all. I still think the guy's a tool. But I never, and he was just one of those guys that he was a very good jiu-jitsu guy. But he never fought. And yet, it's okay. There should be some professionalism when you're a coach on The Ultimate Fighter and you're talking about a legend like Royce Gracie, who just lost to Matt Hughes, and he's talking shit about the guy, and then he's saying that he was talking about it in the parking lot and almost got into a fight because he was happy about it. He's doing your typical idiot. Okay. You know what I mean? So I didn't think it was right, and I brought it up to his ass, you know. And I regret nothing.
Did you guys ever speak again about it,
he's not my type of guy. Okay. You know who he gets along with great? Ben Askren. Ben Askren's jiu-jitsu coach.
Okay.
And Ben's funny because I can see that because they kind of got the same kind of attitude. I like Ben though. Ben's more of a sarcastic type, whatever. But I can see them guys getting along. It's funny. You know,
and he's a but he's a good jiu-jitsu guy.
Yes, he's a good jiu-jitsu guy. So I think Ben, when we talked to, I heard Ben recently saying that somebody asked him what he would do differently, and he said he really, if he would have got together with Mark Lehman earlier, it might have helped his career because he's good at jiu-jitsu. So listen, I'm not knocking the guy. The guy is good in jiu-jitsu, but he should have had some tact with, you know, you're talking about a legend like Royce Gracie. Meanwhile, you're a young black belt in jiu-jitsu, but yet you're afraid to get hit, so you don't get into, you don't take a fight, so you're talking about a legend. You know what I mean? It's one of those things, Jimmy.
Yeah, okay.
People annoy me. But thank you, Chase. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I was happy to see that.
There are a lot of people like that that they're afraid to get in there and they talk some shit. Jimmy, let's talk some stuff about the fights. I really, really enjoyed the
I did too.
Some of those wins, some of those submission wins the other night. You know? Yeah,
you did you enjoyed Kelleher's 39 second.
You don't have to do a ton of tape on a guy, but if you know you're fighting a guy with a guillotine, like he's got a guillotine up there like Pedro Munhoz. He's got one of those type guillotines where you leave it's a fight ending move for him. He gets that on. It's there's not a lot of the guys getting out of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So the fact that Ray Rodriguez went for that double leg right away up against the cage is, you know, I mean, listen, hindsight's 20/20, Jimmy, but don't do that shit with a guy with a sick guillotine, okay?
Yeah, that was probably not the.
But we both picked him to win, so we'll take it. Let's go over our five picks, Jimmy.
We both took De La Rosa by decision.
Well, you heard what I said about hindsight, Jimmy.
We were incorrect.
Listen, we were incorrect. Andre Muniz, what an excellent arm lock. What an excellent arm lock, Arn Fabizinski.
Fabizinski.
Can you say that again? Say it again, Jimmy.
Fabizinski. Yeah.
What a beautiful arm lock. It was an arm lock off the triangle of the head to the arm lock.
Right.
So he went for like a triangle, and what happens, the guy postures up. So when he postures up to get out of a triangle, he leaves himself open for that arm lock. And it's one of those that goes on so fast that it's almost like a scream. So he tapped immediately. And I love that arm lock. It's an arm lock that I personally use a lot because I have short legs and people try to posture out of my triangles. So I either go arm lock or I switch it around to the other side to omoplata. Omoplata, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Okay. So I love that. And I love seeing that black belt technique, you know? So I was in a, submission wonderland. I was loving it.
You were.
What did you think of Michel Pereira?
I mean, look, it was a very, very dominant fight. He looked great. He strikes me as a guy, though, like he's been around for a while.
Oh, man.
He's definitely taken some losses.
Who are you talking about? You got the wrong guy.
No, I don't.
Pereira. What's his record?
He's been fighting for a long time.
In the UFC?
No. But in general.
Okay.
I'll tell you his record in a second.
I thought you meant his UFC career.
No. He's only had a few fights in the UFC.
I might have had this guy pegged wrong, Jimmy. I one time called him a back-flipping silly man.
Right.
Well, I think I might have. I owe this guy an apology. Because he's doing his.
Matt, he's 24-11. He's 24-11. He's had 35 fights.
His opponent, Zalim Amadev.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. That guy was confident. Confident, Jimmy. He smacked him. What about him giving him a little open hand like smack at the weigh-ins? You seen that?
Yeah.
And then during the fight, now this is how you know this Pereira is talented. Because he kisses his hand like this. Not like that. That was kind of weird. But he gets a kiss and he shows it. And then he gave like a fucking smacked him, Jimmy. He got him back for that smack at the little mush at the weigh-ins. So for him to be able to pull that off in a fight, I loved it. I am enjoying. I used to get irked by his antics. I'd be like, come on, what are you doing?
Yeah, antics are correct.
Antics. But I'm loving him now. He was outstriking Zalim, outstriking him. I mean, that dude had some good hands. And he's very athletic.
Yeah.
He's unorthodox. He's a bit of a showman. But it's one thing if you're a showman and you're doing a Showtime kick and you're missing it. No, he's pulling the shit off. I'm enjoying the shit out of this guy. I am enjoying watching this guy fight. I was impressed with the Diego Sanchez fight. He looked very frightening in that fight.
Yep.
And I want to see what's next for him. And in the post-fight interview, he called out he wants the BMF title.
Yeah, against Masvidal.
Called out Jorge Masvidal. Obviously, he'd probably get a fight first or something, but I want to see what's next with him because he's looking amazing. The guy's looking great.
And we've said it before, too, like because he was dropping his hands. And whenever guys do that, they're taunting the other guy. One of two ways. It's really interesting to me how a guy sometimes won't come forward because there's something like so awful about a guy's hands being down if you go to hit him and he hits you. And then you look at what Weidman did, like that can also work against somebody really horribly. Somebody, you know, fucking around in there, you know, makes that one mistake and Weidman wasn't afraid to take full advantage of it. You know what I mean? Some guys I think are a little hesitant when they see that. I probably would be hesitant when I saw that, but you get look at a guy like Chris who wasn't, and he you know destroyed Anderson for it.
Yeah, you know that one. I always tell people like, look, because some people are like, oh man, if Anderson wasn't kidding around, he did that thing. He does that in almost every fight he's ever fought in. So the only difference is it didn't throw Chris off at all. Like you're saying, he just went right after him and kept throwing until he landed. So it wasn't any. It wasn't really a different Anderson or Anderson, you know, oh, he did something out of character, cost him the fight. No, he did something he does every fight. The difference is when he was doing it and Longo's watching the tape with Chris and he say, look, when he does that shit, go after him.
Yeah.
Fuck, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Go right after him. Punch a hole in his chest. All right. But Jimmy, I can't tell you how happy I am for Overeem. This is what I love about mixed martial arts. It was a very competitive fight.
Yeah.
That it was because I'll tell you, Sakai is where the fuck is my hold on, let me get back. Oh, there it is. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Sakai, that dude standing up, you hit that guy with a bat. He's still coming forward.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was having flurries. It might have been 2-2 as far as rounds going into the fifth. Would you agree? It was close.
Yeah, I mean, Overeem. I mean, was it possibly? I'm trying to think about the second round. Overeem did a great ground and pound at the end of the fourth, and I think at the end of the third too, maybe 2-2. Yeah.
Now, what won Overeem this fight is not only his experience, his well-roundedness. Now, those guys could fight all day long standing up, and I don't know, man, flip a coin. They were both having their moments on the feet. The difference of levels on the floor was uncanny. Standing up, man, I don't know, they're close. They're both laying in, they're having their moments, they're taking a shot, they're giving it. On the floor, it was like a black belt with a white belt with four stripes, possibly a blue belt. I don't know. We didn't see much. We saw a guy that was just trying to get up that did not know how to get up. And listen, it's not easy. You got to Overeem knows how to keep a guy down. I loved his takedowns. Let somebody shit on those takedowns. It was so cool because by any means necessary, get that fight to the floor.
Right.
And it's not like he pulled guard. He tripped him down. Like he pulled him almost on top of him and rolled right over him. It was just something that you would do with a guy with less experience. Maybe he's good at getting guys off single legs and whatnot. Maybe he's just going over that. He got him down untraditionally, Jimmy. Untraditional takedowns. You heard DC being like, you're never going to see that in a wrestling textbook or anything. Because it wasn't. It was up against the cage, and it was two takedowns. I want to see them both again. Because they were both, if somebody looked at that, a wrestler would be like, what the hell was that? It's sloppy. It got him where he needed to be.
Yep.
And he went for, I believe, two takedowns, got them both. And once he was on the floor, it wasn't even close to Sakai getting back up. Right. It was a beating. It was a fucking beating, Jimmy.
And the way he was lining up his elbows, like the way he was almost measuring with the hand and then dropping and then measuring and then dropping. It was really great.
Pushing the head and snapping down that elbow. Yep. And Overeem had a brutal, brutal ground and pound.
Yeah.
And it shows, man, guys you know, they could be B standing up, and it's that old saying, you know, you the lion's the king of the jungle. You throw him in the water, and you don't know how to swim, the shark's gonna fucking eat him. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because that's what it looked like with Sakai. Sakai, from now to your next camp, your next fight, elbow escaping, sweeps, up and over, zumpas. I wouldn't even concentrate on getting this guy better at submissions. I would concentrate on not being anybody hold him down, getting all, escaping from mount, escaping from cross-eyed, escaping from half guard. He needs we saw a weakness there. You know what I mean? Yeah. Anybody that fights Sakai again is going to go, okay, stand it up. I'm in for a long night. Let's get this to the floor. So, you know, heads up, Sakai.
Well, Overeem took him deep, too. A really great fight, and Overeem fought a really smart fight. But Sakai was his cardio was better than I thought it would be. He had way better cardio than I thought, and he looked better in the third and fourth round than I expected him to. And I think he probably, I'm going to guess he had better wind than Alistair expected him to, because we kind of knew he was going to take him into the third, fourth, and fifth round. I mean, that's kind of what was obvious that he wanted to do.
My thing is, if he would have pushed for the, he wasn't really looking for the takedowns early, Overeem, if I remember correctly. He looked like he was standing right. He wasn't going for any takedowns.
Yeah, he was just kind of stalking him, just kind of picking his shots.
Yeah, because he was having moments too. They were both having stuff standing up. But when you see the difference, I wonder if he goes back and watches that. And he's like, maybe I should have mushed him up against the cage in the first round. Jimmy, he got him down and it was scary.
Yeah.
It was fucking scary. It was like, dude, this is, what the fuck? Should have done this maybe a few rounds ago. But hey, man, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the whole thing, Jimmy. And I so enjoy that we're having fights every weekend.
I do too. It's great. I love it. I absolutely love it.
Normalcy, you know, Jimmy?
Yeah, every weekend. And again, this is the beauty of it. If someone doesn't fight, a couple guys have tested positive for COVID. Thiago Santos can't fight Teixeira because Teixeira's a positive test. You know, it's going to get moved to, you know, a month from now, or you know that they're going to put together another fight because everybody is kind of circling, waiting for fights. So it's interesting to see the matchups that are being made when guys can't compete. So I want to see that Santos to Sheriff fight. I really want to see what Thiago Santos looks like now after this long layoff.
There's that, and I'll tell you, Glover, at the young age of 40 maybe plus, he's never looked better.
No, he looked great.
You know? He's looking great. Anthony Smith. I mean, geez.
Yeah.
Holy shit, man. I love Glover. He's such a great fighter. He's such a solid dude. You know, such a likable guy. Really, Jimmy. Ovin St. Preux.
Oh, always mentioned. Sure.
Alonzo Menifield.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you my outlook on this, Jimmy. This is now. I feel a little bit for Alonzo because. This is what I will say. I will say that Alonzo made some corrections from his fight with, was it Derek Clark? Yes.
Devin Clark.
I'm sorry. My bad, Clark. God, we found them on Looking for a Fight, by the way. Because Clark fought beautifully with closing the distance. And he had a beautiful game plan. And I feel that in that fight, Alonzo Menifield really tried to put him away hard and he got kind of tired and I think he learned from that and he paced himself, but he might've paced him. Listen, I don't want to be that critic on the side, but he might've paced himself a little too much.
Sure.
Because it went from him looking to take Clark's head off and now he's fighting OSP and he's being more calculated, but maybe a little bit too reserved.
Well, and he's also dealing with OSP's length and that kick. I mean, that body kick he throws is so beautiful when it's working and it's constant and it makes it hard enough. The distance, I think, would have been a little harder for him to close. And with that kick, it just made it almost impossible. So, yeah.
Well, OSP and then
fought
a really
smart fight.
Yeah, when he tried to open up, St. Pierre, oh my God, OSP. With that short hook, when he caught that hook off the when Alonzo was trying to hurt him. Listen, it's no shock when you're in there and you try to hurt somebody, you put yourself in position to get hurt. That's the game we play.
Yeah.
You know. So Alonso took the chance. He tried to hurt him, tried to land something, and OSP, you know, had a nice counter hook. And it was the end of the night for Alonso. But I want to see – I like that we see a difference. Like, Alonso's making changes. He's making right. corrections. I've seen that, even though he wasn't victorious. And it was OSP, what can you say? He's just – I think all his fights, wins, losses, freaking OSP strangles, the Von Flew chokes. I think that, his fight IQ is really just he's really looks composed in there, I should say. You know, never looked better out. You know, he really did.
I love watching him, and I was very happy for him. And people, again, he's another guy that gets overlooked a lot. You know, people don't really talk about Ovince St. Preux. He fights often, but I mean, people don't, he doesn't get mentioned. And I'm always happy to see him win. And, you know, it was a great night.
Fun stuff, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Listen, what else do we have, Jimmy?
Thank you to Jan Blachowicz and thank you to John Gooden.
What are you doing the rest of the day, Jimmy?
Not a whole lot today. I'll relax. It's been a few days off, and then prepare for the radio show tomorrow.
Oh, Jimmy. Well, and that show I listened to you with your friend Chrissy. What was the name?
Chrissy Mayer. Yeah, in hot. The Wet Spot. I almost said dirty. Hot water. That's my other friend.
You're a dirty little boy, Jimmy.
Yeah, I didn't right. care for that name. It was very dirty. Yeah, Chrissy's
Wet Spot. All right, Jimmy, man, listen. I'm going to go. I'm going to take my kids in the pool or something.
Have fun,
I will
buddy.
Talk to you in a couple of days, bro.
All right, Matt.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, guys.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.